Sportscast, July 2nd, 2020. If you haven't yet, please subscribe on all our channels, Facebook, iTunes, and Periscope. And if you're on iTunes, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. And visit us on thesportscast.net, thesportscast.net. This episode is brought to you by Insta Bible app. You can download Insta Bible app on the iOS App Store. College football has been a question mark these past couple of days. Will the season be on? Will certain conferences just play? But we don't know. But we're going to flesh this out with Ty Turner, all the way from a gym in Minneapolis somewhere. Welcome to the Sportscast.
What's up, man?
So, Ty Turner, what's been happening on the neck of the woods? What it feels like you're able to to go to gyms now.
Yes, we are.
Sounds good. And how much can you bench now?
I wouldn't have any idea. I haven't done any kind of hyperbolic strength training in, I don't know, probably almost a decade. So I have not done any one rep on anything. That's not how I train anyways. More HIIT interval training, a mixture between anaerobic, used to do some CrossFit. I still implement some CrossFit workouts if they're safe on the body, but I don't do any heavy loads.
Let's go into the college football season, Tyler. Of course, you know, a lot of things going on with COVID-19. You know, certain sports are just coming down to many tournaments. Football is a big question mark, of course. NFL has recently cut down the preseason to 2 games. College football, which you've been hearing some rumors about, that I've been hearing that they're going to cut the season or maybe to cancel it altogether. What have you been hearing from your end?
Well, where have you heard that they're going to cancel it altogether?
You mentioned something about it on our chat, which we have on WhatsApp, guys.
Okay.
Rumblings about that. Now, I just got it from the chat, so don't blame me. I got it from you.
Well, yeah. I remember I'm just kind of – I would put it out there. I wouldn't even put that out there. It's more rumbling from liberals that I was reading on a board. And according to them, you know, it's perfectly acceptable to riot and protest with thousands and thousands of people. But unfortunately, having played a game in front of thousands of people has to be canceled until a vaccine. So that's kind of how they go, you know. I have no qualms about saying it because this has been completely politicized, and hopefully pragmatism and the ability of each commissioner for each Power Five conference to come together and have a reasonable solution. Canceling society, closing down everything for an insurmountable time, it's just not practical. At the end of the day, most of society it may be susceptible to possibly getting the virus. It's not deadly for most people. There's a lot of data out, and the constantly canceling stuff is not a sustainable thing for our economy, and it will not be sustainable for the sporting industry. So unless there is a severe danger and risk, and there's a risk of mortality, risk of something on a very serious hyperbolic level, you have to continue with life. It's common sense. And it's unfortunately, I've come to the conclusion there's just too much evidence out there that this is just, it's just turned into a political issue. And that's why there's so much differentiating data and stuff out there. And you cannot believe the media. They're on one side of the spectrum currently. And for the most part. So just got to use common sense. But I believe that common sense will prevail, and there will be a college football season.
Now, Ty, from your perspective, do you think it should be a shortened season? Do you think there should be fans? What do you think is going to happen?
The only reason why I think it's going to be a shortened season possibly, and there will be a more limited amount of fans, is to appease everyone. Do I think it's absolutely necessary? No. I think they could do the season as is. I think they could probably have fans, just require maybe a mask. I don't think they'll be able to come to consensus. So I think there'll have to be a kind of a middle ground. So a middle ground would be maybe a 10-game conference season and only half capacity with the crowd. That's what I think will end up in. That's to appease everyone, not that that's what should happen.
Just to remind everyone, in the college football scene season, most FBS teams play 12 regular season games per year, with 8 or 9 of those games coming against conference opponents. One team that's been in speculation, if it goes all conference, is Notre Dame. They're independent. What should they do? Should they join a conference, or they might not be playing at all?
Well, no, that's not going to happen. They will play. They'll probably go in the ACC for the year. They're affiliated with the ACC in every other sport. And they also have several games this season against ACC opponents. Let me pull it up here in a second. And they just fit them into an ACC schedule. Hold on. See this schedule.
We're talking about college football season.
They play Wake Forest. They play Pittsburgh. They play Duke. They play Clemson. They play Georgia Tech. They play Louisville. So wait, they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games already against ACC. So half their schedule is against ACC teams. So all they'd have to do is, let's just say hypothetically a 10-game conference season. I believe everyone in the ACC plays 9 games. So 4 teams would just pick Notre Dame up as an extra game. That would be pretty easy. So, yeah, they'd probably go to the ACC for a year.
Something to definitely look at. Of course, we've been hearing rumblings that a shortened season could happen. Like Ty says, he thinks 10 is best. I've been hearing 8. Would it be – I mean, if they do 8, they'll have a late start, I guess, maybe like late September.
Well, the reason why I'm pushing back against 8 is because the ACC – I'm not sure about the ACC, I think, but I know the Pac-12, the Big Ten, SEC, I think, are 8 games. Big 12, I'm not sure. Pac-12 is 9. So how are you going to do 8 games when – like if it's an 8-game season, then I guess you have to cancel a – game in conference for like a Pac-12 game, and it just seems like it'd be easier to add 2 conference games to conferences like the SEC, Big Ten, and then to just have 1 conference extra game for like a Pac-12 and whatever. I don't know what, off the top of my mind, I don't know which conference exactly have the 9 games. I know the Pac-12 does, so that's all I know. So they'd have to lose a conference game. So
you follow Pac-12 really closely. What have you heard on their end?
Well, Pac-12, obviously, everyone is going to be how do I say this right? They're going to be the most woke. they're gonna figure out how.
You've been very political today, haven't you?
Well, because it is. Everything's a society political. That's the thing. Like now, I blog these sports boards, and they're like, "Don't get political. Everything's political. Viruses are political.
Yeah, it's hard to get out of it.
Protests are political." The word Christian's political, Jesus is political, everything's political. So it is political.
Okay. Back to the Pac-12.
So I can't avoid it. And a conference like the Pac-12 on the West Coast, which obviously, do I need to say more? they're going to have more. They have the most issues. They have all Democratic governors in Oregon, in Washington, in California. And that makes up 7 of their teams. You got Utah, you got Arizona, you have Colorado's Democratic too. So most of the governors of the states are Democrats. Obviously, they're opening up the states slower. A lot of them have a lot more restrictions. So there is that issue to deal with, as opposed to, let's say, the SEC, where you got states. I was in SEC country. I was in Georgia. I was in South Carolina.
Florida.
Those states are very... I wasn't in Florida. I just was in Georgia, South Carolina. And those states are completely open. There's very limited restrictions. So obviously, the South Carolinas, the Georgias, the Georgia Techs, Florida states, the Miamis, they are going to have a lot more ability to have fans. They have a lot less restrictions on them. Whereas states like California, Oregon, and Washington are, unless you belong to the Republic of Chaz, they have a lot more restrictions on them. So unless the Chaz people can come up with getting that little stadium together, maybe in that area.
But they disbanded this morning, I believe, or yesterday.
Okay. But I think that it's a little more difficult. But at the end of the day, money speaks. But that's why I think there'll be consensus, meaning the SEC might say, hey, we want to play a 12-game schedule with 70% capacity with fans. Then let's say the woke Pac-12 says, well, we only want to play 8 games with 20% fans. And then you'll have like the Big Ten, which actually would be very much a mix, more so than most. You know, you have states like Ohio that's more open, but then you have states like Pennsylvania and Michigan and Minnesota that aren't, and Wisconsin's like in the middle. So then you have states that are more open and not. So the Big 12's kind of in the middle. You got the South that's pretty much going to be more open. So then I think they all have to come to a consensus, and whatever they agree upon for the consensus will probably be what the set schedule will be. And I think obviously the more restrictive, more less fans, less games will probably be pushed by like the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. The more fans, more games will be pushed by like the SEC, ACC, maybe even the Big 12. And I think they'll meet in the middle somewhere. And I think when all is said and done, it will be a conference-only schedule. I believe it will be maybe 50% capacity with fans. And
I say 25%. I say 25. That's my guess.
I think it'll be 50.
Okay. Want to bet on that?
25%. I don't bet. But.
Okay, that's fine.
why do you say 25? Why do you say 25%? I'll listen. Why do you think
25%? I didn't hear anything. I didn't read any evidence, but I've been hearing from the other leagues, like for example, NASCAR, European leagues. They start off at 25%. That's why, which is what my consensus is. So,
okay, here's a question for you.
Okay.
Let's say they start off at 25%, and then it turns out that things aren't bad. Do you think they ramp up to 50%?
Yes.
By mid-season?
Yes, either mid-season or towards the end.
Okay, that's what I – okay. Yeah, I could see that, yeah. And what do you think? What are you hearing?
Like, I'm hearing what I've been hearing from the chat. So I didn't hear anything outside. I've been hearing a shortened season with college football. 25%.
Oh, and yeah, I didn't hear that. Might as well establish that one of us does have a source that is actually an official for one of the conferences.
Yes.
And he stated that, well, because it makes our arguments better. He stated that right now that the consensus is leaning towards a conference-only season, the four-team playoff, no bowl game. And he didn't say anything about capacity, but you could be right.
Maybe.
You could be right.
We could probably ask him a little bit later on. Which conference?
I don't want to hear Dr. Fauci's opinion on it.
Oh, man. But I thought he was a sports expert.
The guy's not. Oh, my God.
I'm kidding.
Has the guy ever gave a solid answer on anything? Or does he just make these little, like, oh, things could be getting worse? He just puts out enough there to, like, freak everyone out and then doesn't answer one other question.
Yeah, anyways, I'm going to go with him. Anyways, which conference, all conference schedule would be, like, the most interesting? I say the SEC. What's yours?
Yeah, SEC, Big Ten. There will be controversy because what I could see is, and this would be the miserable part. So let's say the SEC, tough schedule. Let's say they all lose one game, okay? Mm-hmm. And then you have undefeated champs. Hypothetically, let's say Oregon's undefeated in the Pac-12, Oklahoma's undefeated in the Big 12, you got ACC, Clemson's undefeated, and then you have, I'm missing the conference, Big 10, Ohio State's undefeated, but then you have a one-loss champion in the SEC. What would people be saying if SEC gets left out? You know, especially since their schedule is by far the toughest. But then you also, if you leave, let's say, out Oregon, you're going to leave out an undefeated Power 5 conference team. The team is pretty good. I don't know. There could be some controversy.
That could be a good article, by the way.
It could be a good article.
Okay, let's move on. There has been discussion of for some conferences to cancel, like, the spring season for next year. What have you heard about that?
So say that again.
For like the football spring football season, you know, which is, you know, a small practice and a yep. I've heard there's a possibility to also cancel that too.
I mean, why don't they just like let things play out? I'm sure after November 11th. I'm sure after November 4th, restrictions will lessen. That's just my prediction. So
why that day? Like,
I don't know.
We're trying to be apolitical here, but it's impossible, isn't it?
It's impossible.
No, you're right. You make a good point.
I'm harboring my inner Clay Travis.
Great guy. Probably one of the best sports journalists or sports Twitter guys out there. The other ones, wow, it's you can't follow sports. Yeah. It's all becomes – anyways, I don't want to get into this.
Why do they even – I do have a question for you.
Okay.
If you want the season canceled and you're just going to push one side all the time, why are you working in sports media?
True.
Why are they working in sports media? Like, yeah. if they want everything to be shut good down, point. Then they should shut down.
I don't want anything shut down. I want things at least okay.
I agree. No, I agree. Us that want stuff to happen, but all the guys that seem to be pushing the other side, well, why don't they give up their job for a while?
Yeah, you're right.
I mean,
yeah.
it's not like we read anything from them that's enlightening anyways. Well, this is my opinion.
Anyways, I want to ask you about how is like the Athletic doing. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
They're not okay. doing good. But,
yeah. This part of the show, Tyler obviously follows, you know, a lot of talent as well, not just recruiting but also talent within the squads. Can you name us your top most talented rosters in the Pac-12 right now?
Specifically the Pac-12. Do you want me to do the whole country or just want me to do the Pac-12?
Let's do Pac-12, and if we have time, we might squeeze another one, but I doubt it. But go ahead.
Okay, so in the Pac-12, so I have my, like, I'm going to do an article that's going to break it down into tiers. And I actually went through and I actually added together all the quality points for each recruit. So, like, if they're a recruit that has a composite score of 99.80, which is a 5-star, which is probably one of the highest in a class, I'll be either top 5 every year, he would have 29.80 quality points. So I actually went through and added the quality points of all the Tier 2 teams, a Tier 2 college football roster. I added together all of the what I would consider the Tier 2 talent rosters in college football. So the Tier 1 rosters are Alabama, Clemson, LSU, Georgia, and Ohio State. The reason why they're Tier 1 is because they have 50-plus blue-chip players. They have almost 30-plus top 100 players. They have double-digit 5-stars. Those are clearly the 5 best rosters on paper in college football. Those are Tier 1 rosters. Those are elite rosters. Those are championship rosters, however you want to put it. Tier 2 is the ones that I would all consider college football player rosters, very good rosters, rosters with pretty much half or better blue-chip players, you know, close to double-digit top 100 players and multiple 5-stars. And in there, if you want to specifically just exfoliate the Pac-12 teams, I would have 3 Tier 2 rosters in the Pac-12. So 0 Tier 1. I don't have any Tier 1 rosters in the Pac-12. I don't think any of the rosters are at the level of a Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, and LSU. But the Tier 2 and USC would fall, when I added these points, on my formula, they fall at number 10 currently. And when I added all these points together, I believe they fell, I'm going off the top of my head, I think it was actually 11. So I think they're number 11 when I added the quality points, and they're number 10. In my formula, Oregon is 13. When I added all the quality points, they were 12. Now, if I were to actually, in a nutshell, compare USC versus Oregon, USC, a lot of their players that were rated 5-stars, that were top 100 level players, haven't necessarily played to that level. And I think a lot of that goes to just the culture of USC, the development of the coaching staff. So even though on paper USC has a slight edge over Oregon, because of how the Oregon players have played either at or above their recruiting ranking, I would rank Oregon's roster above USC. And that's not, I know I'm an Oregon fan. I know that they're the team that I cover and it's my fandom, but I'm being, from just an objective perspective, if you compare five-star to five-star, four-star to four-star, you have five stars at USC that have not played at an all-conference level, that have not been big-time producers, whereas guys like Kayvon Thibodeau was a freshman All-American. Penei Sewell was the Outland Trophy winner, first team All-American. Mikhail Wright was a freshman All-American. And those are all the highest-rated guys for Oregon. So the way to put that would be Oregon's high-rated guys have played to the rating, whereas USC has had guys like Kyle Gattatute, or however you say his name. He hasn't done a whole lot since he's been at USC. Who's another guy that it was a really high-rated guy for USC? Elijah Griffin, he was a five-star. His first 2 years, he hasn't been an all-conference performer. He wasn't a freshman All-American. Chris Steele wasn't a freshman All-American. He was a top 50 guy. So Stephen Carr, who was a five-star, since a five-star coming out of high school, he has not played to that level, has not been an all-conference running back. He's not one of the highest, most productive returning running backs in the Pac-12. So I would say I would give an edge. If you're going to say the data to go along with the production, that Oregon ranks higher than USC. And then at number three, I'd put Washington. Washington is a little below Oregon and USC as far as the baseline. They finish lower when it comes to the overall points in my team talent formula. They finished lower when it came to the quality points, which I might put that formula out too, but the quality points, they ranked lower than both USC and Oregon. And I believe Washington, during Chris Peterson's time, guys actually outplayed the ranking. So he had a lot of guys that were three stars that ended up becoming second, third round draft picks. So let's see how Jimmy Lake does, but I would put them at three. And then if I was going to have a third tier, which I might not, because I don't really think a third tier, for the most part, has even made the college football playoff, I would probably put Stanford and Arizona State there. Stanford finishes 20th in my team talent formula. Arizona State is in the next out. It'd be about the number 28th rated roster. But I think that I don't think either of those rosters are really capable of making the college football playoff. I think you have three rosters that can make the college football playoff in the Big 12 from a baseline talent perspective. And even though the baseline data would edge out USC, I think if you look at the production plus data, Oregon has the best roster in the Pac-12.
Of course, Oregon is conducted by Mark Cristobal, a talented coach, but also a good recruiter. First thing he did in Oregon was get the recruiting system going and got big names so far, and it's still working out. So Tyler has high hopes for him still and the organization as well, and we'll see what happens with the Pac-12. And no more the Civil War game. So
yes, I even go there.
Which I'm not surprised, but it's okay. Anyways, let's go to our next topic, the Elite 11. It is a quarterback competition for high school quarterbacks across the United States. The Elite 11 was founded in 1999 by Andy Bark and continues to be run by his company, Student Sports Incorporated. It is hosted at the Nike World Headquarters in Beaverton, Oregon. Tyler, tell us a little bit about this year's Elite 11.
Yeah, this year's is a little different because, you know, obviously a lot of things were shut down. Normally the Elite 11 has a 7-on-7 portion where the quarterbacks play with some of the most elite wide receivers in the country. They did not have that this year. But it was 3 days of competition. The first day, I believe, was a route tree. So they had every quarterback go through a route tree. Day two was a pro day style workout, which had each quarterback go through a pro day style workout that had them go down systematically, starting at the 5-yard line with short passes, and then they would air the ball to the field with longer passes. Then they mix in rollouts and scramble drills until they barely got the goal line, they did goal line pass drills. And then day three, they did this like gadget kind of like hit the target drill, and you had to hit a target before you moved on to the next station. I honestly, of the three drills, I thought that would have been weird. But the other two I thought were pretty applicable to overall football. The MVP was Caleb Williams out of Gonzaga Prep in Washington, D.C. He makes his commitment on July 4th. I believe it will be Oklahoma in the 247 crystal ball, which all the experts predict someone to go somewhere. He's a unanimous choice to go to Oklahoma. So Oklahoma, once again, will land a top quarterback. Not surprising. According to 247 Sports and Rivals.com, the top performer at the actual event, so the Elite 11 MVP went to a guy that was good at the event, but also what came into play was his overall production as a junior in high school. But then from Rivals.com and 247, they gave the top performer at the event to Ty Thompson from Arizona, and he's committed to
Oregon.
Oregon. And he was very impressive. I saw him at the event the first 2 days. I believe he was the best looking prospect. 6'5", 215 pounds. He's a lot like Justin Herbert. If there could be a comparison, that he's very similar to Herbert. Size, athletic ability.
That's a good
arm
sign.
Strength. He reminds me a lot of Herbert. He's even kind of like him personality wise.
Uh oh.
Quiet. Yeah. Well, yeah. Maybe quiet and like
introvert,
outspoken. Yeah, he's a good student. So, I think the kid's impressive. I think he's going to get a bump. I think he'll end up a top 15, maybe a five-star prospect when all is said and done. So I was incredibly impressed. So the Oregon's going to be in a good place with him. I think Oklahoma will be in a good place with Caleb Williams. I also like how Brock Vandergrift, Georgia commit, he won the gadget drill. He's a five-star. I think he's a good-looking prospect. Kind of a dual threat guy, but I think he's a good-looking athlete. Who else was I impressed by? McCord, the kid who's going to Ohio State, is a big arm. I don't think he's quite like in today's college football. You really want mobility as a premium, just with all these unique defenses and all these exotic defenses. I just think that you really have to be able to move in the pocket. And McCord has a huge arm. He's a really good arm talent. I do think he lacks a little bit of that mobility that's necessary. I like the Del Rio kid that's going to Florida. I thought he had a good arm, good athlete. Thought he was overall a pretty impressive kid. And Miller Moss, who's going to USC, was a solid. I don't think he's a high ceiling guy. He's not super big, doesn't have a great arm, not a superb athlete, but I think he's a very consistent kind of player. I think he could be a very consistent college quarterback. Those are my top performers. If I had to predict who I think will be the three best in college, I mean, you have to like anyone that goes into Lincoln Riley's system. So I love Caleb Williams going into Oklahoma, and Vandergrift's going to play around a lot of talent at Georgia. And, Oregon has been great at producing top-level quarterbacks. They've put more guys in the first and second round this decade, more than anyone outside of Oklahoma and USC. So I like Thompson, and I like his ability. I like him playing in the Oregon offense, and I think he will be a very good college quarterback.
Yep. Notable 11 has notable a lot of history from it. A lot of stars came from it. Andrew Luck, Matt Stafford, James Winston, Bridgewater, Matt Leinart, Geno Smith, Mark Sanchez, Tim Tebow, Vince Young, Kyle Orton, and Troy Smith. And you can see it on YouTube, I believe, right?
Yep.
There you have it.
I believe you're able. And I was able to watch it all live on Instagram Live. Elite 11 was videoed in live.
And Ty Turner, of course, covers the talent and the scouting. Tyler, give us a quick 60-second recruiting update. Anything lately happening, like these past couple weeks, that it's notable to mention on the show?
Well, when it comes to Oregon has the number 6 class. They're trending in the 247 crystal ball for several other top 100 prospects. I think Oregon, as long as it's season, as long as it's good, I think they'll land a top 10, maybe a top 5 class. Which teams are good right now? Ohio State has the number 1 class. They're having a ridiculous class. Alabama and Georgia is really starting to heat up on the trail. They've landed the top 100 prospects. Other teams are doing well. Tennessee's had a good class. North Carolina has the number 2 class in the country. Mack Brown has recruited at a very good level the last couple of years. And look for Oklahoma to land Caleb Williams on July 4th. Another 5-star prospect. prospect at the quarterback position going to Oklahoma. Yeah, I guess you could call it, kind of consider them QBU. Not surprising. Last 3 years, they've had two Heisman Trophy winners, two first-round draft picks, and another Heisman drop. So, yeah, that's a quick preview.
Keep an eye out on the sportscast.net. Tyler will definitely flesh out like the news when it comes to talent and scouting and how things are going. Talent never stops. COVID hasn't stopped it. And the wars when it comes to recruiting is still going on behind the scenes. Anything else before we head into poll questions?
I'm good, man.
What is the most important condiment for the hot dog? The options are ketchup, relish, mayonnaise, or mustard?
Mayonnaise on a hot dog?
I know. Some people do it.
Ketchup.
Ketchup. It is winning 50% in the poll, Twitter poll. Mustard is coming at second. Mayonnaise at third. Relish is coming in last. You could vote on the sportscast.net Twitter at the sportscast one. Ty Turner, what is the best way to reach you to talk to you about Michigan Wolverine football?
Talking about the Wolverines? Well, you might need to go to someone who likes the Wolverines. No, I'm kidding. Michigan football at TurnerCast.
And Michigan State, follow us on Twitter. So that's saying a lot for us. It really is.
Jeez. Go Spartans.
And, of course, our Twitter is at TheSportsCast1, TheSportsCast1. And, of course, TheSportsCast.net for the latest and greatest. A lot going on. NFL season schedule is starting to be clear a little bit, but we'll see. We'll find out more a little bit later today if the preseason will be cut a little bit shorter, or the regular season will be pushed back. We'll see. But hopefully everyone's okay with the college with the NFL preseason cutting short. So no complaints there.
I don't mind stuff like that. It's just let's stop the talk about that. Let's
talk the hoopla. Let's not make Dr. Fauci the NFL commissioner anytime soon.
Let's not make Dr. Fauci anything more than he is. Which is short. No, I'm just kidding. No, he obviously is a well-known epidemiologist, but yeah.
Anyways. Ty Turner, great show.
All right. See you later, bro.